Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin on the Capital Ideas Podcast. Investment professionals reveal how they find their next great idea, what gives them their investment edge, and a few personal stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Capital Client Group, Inc.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
So, first up, we look at the business stories of the week and indeed the weekend. Delighted to be joined this morning by Susan Hayes-Culleton of Hayes-Culleton, a.k.a. The Positive Economist. Also delighted to be joined by a man we haven't spoken to in a while, Mr. Paul O'Dwyer. He's a dental surgeon and a dentist with Portman Dentex. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Thank you, Bobby.
Thanks, Bobby.
Paul, we haven't seen you for a while, so we'll let you off on the front line of the front page of the Irish Times. The Taoiseach is signalling big budget giveaways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So there's a great piece by Pat Leahy talking about the budget giveaway. Basically, the proceeds from the sale of the state's ownership of AIB is going to speed up all the projects.
€2 billion.
And obviously, Simon Harris says it in his mind. He wants to continue on the programme for government and ideally lead this government back in after the next election. The cost of living giveaways, which were the once-off payments, will be maintained for this, their third year. The sale of the €2 billion, of course, will fund things like the infrastructure projects. So October 1st budget day, we hope we'll see an increase in look at things like education and housing. And of course, from his own perspective as Taoiseach, he's also looking at the international scene as well with regard to Gaza.
Yeah. Susan, this is kind of more of the same. It's the best kept secret. It is the season of drip, drip. We know what's in the budget. But these one-off payments, the continuity of them is, no one will really stand up to them and stop them.
It's interesting that you mentioned drip, drip, Bobby, because what really stood out to me here is that he said the priority areas for infrastructure investment were water, energy and housing. That's there roundabout in the middle of Pat Leahy's piece. And I think that's where the attention needs to go, because I think when we look at housing and how much is being spent on it, we also have to bear in mind that houses can only operate if water and energy is powered into them. And I think that what's totally underreported is the challenge that we have around water in this country. So, for example, the Liffey supplies 85% of drinking water to 1.7 million people in Greater Dublin. And there is no slack there. If there's any issues there at all, then there can be a really big issue. And that is for existing housing stock. Like, I looked at Paris and Lisbon, where they have 40% redundancy in plans. We don't have any. So when I see this about spending money, particularly on water and energy, as well as housing, I think it's welcome and badly needed and really long term.
Well, our other guest here on the other side of the table doesn't want his water being taken from Lough Derg and pumped up to Dublin, I can tell you that. Isn't that right, Paul?
Well, good water quality for everybody is what we're all about. But I agree. I mean, the thing about infrastructure is not just physically putting up the houses, but all the supports that are around them, utilities particularly, I would agree with.
When we have you there, Paul, let's go to America. The Kamala Harris show, the speeches, the drama around it. Two pieces here. Smart Harris steps out of the fight with Trump to focus on the real battle. Analysis there by Philip Bump. And we're also looking at an opinion piece where it's telling us that Kamala enjoys her moment, but this race could still turn sour.
Absolutely. This, of course, is the year of elections and the US is where it's at. So this is a great piece by Philip Bump. And we've just seen, of course, the DNC's convention over in Chicago. The strategy up to this point has been really to fight Trump on his own terms. This is what Biden was doing. But Kamala's positioning into the main ticket head means that they're changing strategy and they're effectively treating Trump as an outlier. And they're back to this idea, is Trump fit to be president? In fact, the term she used was that he was unserious, quote unquote. So hopefully this transitioning into an alternative with Harris Walz versus Trump Vance will see that. And Jitendra Joshi in the opinion piece talks a little bit about how Harris, of course, has great debating skills given her background. And of course, the DNC was full of razzmatazz. We had Bill Clinton, we had Barack Obama, and she's enjoying a 2 to 3 point lead in the polls at the moment. But it's a long, long way, as you know, to November.
But in just 4 weeks, as we're told, a sense of political euphoria has powered the Democrats back into contention in the presidential race. Her strategy of saying not a lot, particularly to the media, I think could play into her hands, because really one part of that strategy is sit back and let Trump screw up.
Well, that was the policy really of Keir Starmer's election manifesto, you could say, and certainly that worked well. But that, I think, is not quite the same as what we're looking at here. I was in the States the week of the 4th of July, and that was also the week of the debate, and the debate, of course, that led to Biden stepping down. And it is really striking to see what has happened since. I think that what we're looking at here is, first of all, Kamala is number one. She's everything you just said there, Paul, about having all of those people on stage. One of the real challenges the Democratic Party have had, or the Democrats have had, is the fact that they haven't been unified. Mm-hmm. And it looks like she's unifying them. They were all there. Clinton, both of the Obamas, Biden herself. I mean, this is certainly something. The other thing is that the fact that she's a woman doesn't seem to be front and centre of what she's saying. She's letting people say that about her, which is very different to what Hillary did in 2016. And it's just interesting how Hillary had the tagline, "I'm with her," whereas where Kamala is going is, "She's with you." And the other thing here is that I think is really, really interesting is to watch how the Democrats are putting forward that they can be patriots too. Because that isn't playing Trump at his game, that's playing the Republicans at their game. And that is what's very interesting. And one other point is that Leo Varadkar, of course, was invited out to be at the DNC, the guest of Nancy Pelosi. A very interesting interview with him in the paper during the week as well.
Mm. Yeah, okay, we'll watch with interest, because I think whatever you think about American politics, I find it fascinating.
Fascinating, Bob.
And moving to some business stories, Paul, the Evoke owner, Aramark, they received 10.5 million in COVID supports last year. Mm-hmm. That's according to Ian Kern in today's Irish Times.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a piece which looks at them receiving 10.5 million, as you say. And it goes through the fact that their revenue has increased by up to 18% to year end September 2023 to 314 million. However, the group has seen an increase in operating loss of up 7% to 110.4 million.
These are big losses.
These are big losses, even in today's.
Given the turnover in the business and also the various arms of their business, be it in property management, in catering, in ancillary services, in direct provision centres, Avoca, like it's a lot of different parts. With a huge turnover, but huge losses.
Huge losses, yeah. And as you mentioned there, the direct provision centres in County Clare, Knocknalisheen. And again, the idea here is an extra piece there by Gordon Deegan, which looks at that as well. So its revenue rises despite the job losses and that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, yes. I suppose a couple of things stood out for me. When I saw the headline first, and it is quite prominent, is that Avoca owner Aramark received 10.5 million in COVID supports. And I thought that was the end of it until I read the last part, which is last year. Mm. It's surprising for us to read a piece in 2024 about COVID supports in 2023. And he makes this point. He said that they did say that they received almost 10.6 million in respect to various forms of subsidised wage schemes to provide relief for entities during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2023. So I would be interested to know what...
I thought the same, actually.
Yeah, I wonder what form that takes. It's interesting too, Bobby, before we came on today, that you spoke about who you're going to be speaking with later on today, because a recurring theme every week in the news these days is about restaurant closures. What I noted here is that the accounts highlighted that the group's food service division was the best performing, and growing with its revenues, growing its revenues by 48%. So there's an incongruence there.
And there's another one in our next story, because if we look at the profitability in the Right Group, which is also a food related business, it increased almost threefold to 10.67 million last year. Mm-hmm. So this is a very different scenario to what I'm going to be talking with Kevin Dundon and Jim Power about in a few minutes.
Very different picture. This is, of course, the Right Group had seen a threefold surge in profits. This is from Gordon Deegan's piece. And it looks the accounts, of course, from Treasure Trail Holdings. So they had a pre-tax profit last year of 10.67 million. Their chief executive, as you know, is Michael J.F. Wright. And as you know, they run various areas, including the Marquette Hall at Dublin Airport, the UCD Food Hall, the Angler's Rest at Strawberry Beds and that. So 75% operating profit at 9.32 million and strong sales.
But just to pause there for a second, you know, the food hall, when you go into Terminal 2 and Terminal 1, the market, Like, it's a serious business.
Massive business.
Yeah. There's turnover here of nearly 50 million euros.
Huge. Yeah,
like, this is a big, big business.
It is. But I mean, as Gordon Deegan mentions here, the boost in revenues is also coincides with the fact the passenger numbers grew to 31.9 million as well in Dublin Airport. I love numbers, Bobby, as you know, and there's nothing that excites me more than digging into a set of accounts. So a couple of things stand out to me here. Number one is the fact that, yes, as you mentioned, the profits increased threefold, but yet the group revenues only increased 38%. So something is going on here, and that is that they're making a massive difference in cost. Mm. The question is it cash cost or is it not? Because they also talk about the change in amortization and depreciation. They're non-cash measures. But then I went on to notice that the 75% number that you mentioned there, Paul, that is the operating profit increase. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to figure out here is that it looks like here what's going on in the business is it's becoming more efficient, yes. But there's also once-off things happening. And this is actually pointed to in the piece where it's mentioned that a net exceptional cost of 1.2 million concerning the write-off of intercompany balances and the disposal of Rights Cafe Bar Airside Limited reduced profits. So that is something, if I was watching this or I was thinking about investing in this business or watching it year over year, there's a lot of once-off things going on here.
And 1.2 million is a significant amount of a write-off.
And also the increase in passenger numbers was a very significant change there as well. So I think like what the business is doing is very, very interesting. But those once-offs, it'll be interesting to see how that translates into moving forward and recurring.
Paul, I know you're a dentist and sometimes fillings are made out of gold. but in times of war, crisis, inflation and turmoil, gold continues to offer investor comfort, as we're told today in today's Irish Times.
Yes, this is a really, really interesting piece, actually, because as we know, when there is a financial crisis or a disaster, everybody rushes for gold. And this is not unusual. It's been a recurring theme in history, as you know. So we've seen the Chinese and Indian buyers of jewellery and gold increasing all the time. Gold reached a staggering €2,277 per troy ounce, which was five times the inflation-adjusted price. We've seen the central banks of many countries, including obviously China and Russia, they're trying to reduce their reliance on the US dollar. That's a lot of what's driving this. In this particular piece in the Irish Times, it talks about the interview Nick Brody, who's the chief executive of Golconda. It's a very small Canadian listed mining operation. Now, he makes the point that the smaller players who are doing this gold mining, their production costs have obviously increased. In fact, he says himself that every cent he makes goes back into the business. But there's a lot of gold out there. I mean, the piece goes on.
Well, so what he's saying there is the difference between owning gold and producing gold are two very different things.
Yeah.
So like the asset is rising in value, but the cost of producing it is also rising.
Here's what I think has changed over the centuries is that 100 years ago, or back when the Dutch Navy was sailing up the Thames Estuary in 1667, the only way to gain exposure to the asset was to buy it. Mm-hmm. If I wanted, and have done, by the way, in the past, if I wanted to gain exposure to gold today, I wouldn't need to buy a bar of it at all. I could buy an exchange-traded commodity, for example, and never have a bar of it in the sitting room.
Yeah.
I could also buy a derivative. I could buy a gold mining stock. And that's one of the things that's different, is that you don't have to buy actual gold bullion in order to gain exposure to it. As people may be aware, Warren Buffett is not a big fan of it because he says it does nothing. You dig it out of the ground and then you put it back down, which is what the piece also highlights. What you're talking about there, Paul, about the de-dollarization is a fundamental shift. The other one, of course, is the flight to quality when you've got geopolitical unease, as we're seeing now. Mm-hmm. But also as well, from an investor's point of view, the dollar has strengthened in recent days because of the announcement.
What is it, 111? I think it was 110 earlier in the week.
Yeah. I don't know the exact number, so at the risk of being wrong, I won't say anything at all.
Unlike me.
but markets are pricing in a 35% chance of a rate cut now as inflation, it looks like US inflation is more or less under control, while employment now, there's a risk there to the downside. So as an investor today, I would be more inclined to look for high quality, undervalued companies that produce a dividend rather than an asset that just sits.
And is one of the factors here that the US owns so much gold that they're sitting on $507,000 bars, the New York Federal Reserve. The fact that they own so much of the world's gold Does that influence its relationship with the dollar?
Well, it's the fact that so much gold is in America doesn't necessarily determine who exactly owns it. The fact that it's stored there, this really is an inflation hedge. This is always what happens when you've got a lot of unease.
Yeah.
And particularly, I remember the last time the gold really rocketed was back in 2009, 10, 11, 12, when there was a massive printing of money and a lot of inflation was expected. Of course, it didn't happen then for a decade. But that's often, it's a bellwether.
Yeah, absolutely.
Looking at an interesting story in today's Irish Independent about a young lady called Sive Coffey Duff. Mm-hmm. She's a plumber and served her time as an apprentice, mm-hmm. and talks about, you know, being a female in what appears to be a very, very male-dominated world, and the struggles that she had to gain her qualification, even though she still says that she wouldn't change anything. But it was sort of challenging to read that really if someone wants to take this route as a female, it should be a much easier path.
Yeah, it should be a much easier path, Bobby. And, you know, I identify a lot with this. As you know, I've got four daughters, so I'm always...
So do I.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm always thinking ahead about what girls can do. This is a really interesting piece by Anne-Marie Walsh in today's Independent about training as a plumber. This is Sive Coffey Duff, making the point that 1% to 2% of the people in trades are women. So it's a very small number. This is a 23-year-old third-year apprentice from Tyrrellstown. She actually was going to do Spanish and Irish at UCD, and then 3 weeks before starting, she decided to go in to do a trade. And she was the first of her family to do this. So in a survey with the Connect Trade Union, there's actually a dropout rate of 20% from apprenticeships. And
so that's one in five.
That's one in five. And this is a really, it's as you say, parts of this are harrowing because she was the only woman on site with 400 men. And she was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, taking three buses, you know, getting a very small wage to do that. But obviously enjoys the job and hopefully will be one of the pioneers in getting more women into the trades.
What do you make of this story, Susan?
I'm somebody that's immersed in STEM and young people and encouraging young women to pursue. It's just interesting there, Paul, you say, like, you're talking to your daughters about what girls can do. They can do anything they want.
Yeah,
like, that's the thing. But the point is do they want to? And stories like what Sive is saying here, as you say, Bobby, it's hard to read about what she was facing on site and so on like that. In my opinion, number one is that I think a lot of young people today, number one, think apprenticeship is a trade and it's not necessarily. There's an awful lot more professional apprenticeships available now. Number two, they don't actually know that you can get paid to work during an apprenticeship. So I always paraphrase apprenticeships as learn and earn at the same time. And there's a big drive now, certainly at government level, where to encourage more people into apprenticeships. Like last year, there was 8,712 new registrations. They're aiming to get that to 10,000 by 2025. And we need people like Sive, number one, to tell her story and to say what actually happens. Number two, we need workplaces to be aware of. If you want to be more inclusive, and I know that's a bit of a buzzword at the moment, if you want to expand your talent pipeline, let's take it that way instead, you need to make sure people on site are behaving in such a way that is actually welcoming of this. And lip service around this is just nonsense. It needs to be followed up with action.
But when you think about it, and if we stand back from this story, why wouldn't a young girl want to be a plumber and make money, or an electrician, or a carpenter?
To a large degree,
like, it's a societal thing that we...
You can't be what you can't see. And this is the thing, is that that's what I'm saying. I really welcome the fact that Sive is in this.
Yep.
And I would, we launched the STEM TY Challenge this week in Cork. We're running engineering across the border in the north of the country as well. We're actively immersed in this area all the time. And so a lot of apprentices are busy getting on with their lives and doing their job. It's encouraging them to get onto platforms and say, this is what it's really like. And it is absolutely a really interesting career direction for a lot of people.
And when we have you there, Susan, I know you've been to many of the American football games. The college football is here in town. I saw them all yesterday evening and indeed this morning. Florida State University and Georgia Tech. They're 400 kilometres apart, but this is a derby and it's happening in Dublin.
I was at the Notre Dame game last year with my sister-in-law. It was amazing. So I was out for breakfast this morning before coming in. And I mean, Dublin is absolutely covered in people between Florida and Georgia. And it's a phenomenal occasion. It really is. Before I went to see that game, I thought American football was, you know, a really slowed down version of a hurling game with no ball necessarily that was going in the air with a stick. But it is such a production. It is absolutely fabulous. Ronan McGreevy, here tells us a little bit about the numbers. Like, they really are striking. So the American, 27,000 fans are travelling over for this. And like that will...
And they're all high-spending individuals.
They are. Yeah. The people I met this morning were anyway. And this is the 10th Aer Lingus College Classic. And the tagline is that it's more than a game. And it is. In my mind, it's an experience. It is a great
opportunity. It's also 5 hours long, which is...
It's great, though. You wouldn't feel a classic. You really wouldn't. It is just brilliant between the music and I was participating in the singing along as well, contributing to the volume. And Florida State is bringing 11,000 fans to Ireland. And the other thing, of course, is that lots of people had to get a passport to come over here. So you're all super welcome and enjoy it down at the Aviva at 5:30 today. Welcome.
Paul, it doesn't sound like an All-Ireland.
It doesn't sound like an All-Ireland. One stat that always intrigues me is the number of passports. So many of the youngsters who are overplaying here for this thing actually didn't have a passport to leave the country.
Yeah.
Which is often a feature in the US. So I think they had to organise 85 different passports for these guys.
That is unusual. All right. You know? Okay. And very finally, Susan, why do we take so many selfies? Because we're afraid of dying, psychologists tell us.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I never shy away from a selfie. It's something I got from my dad. I have to say, Dad and myself were delighted to get into any photograph. And he was 70 last week. Happy birthday, Dad. Yes. And he was 70 last week. And sure, I was taking pictures all over the place of myself and himself. And my mum and my brother were bolting for fear that they could be caught in them. So this piece says that perhaps the reason that we're all taking selfies is because of a fear of dying and we want to immortalise ourselves. Myself and Dad aren't worried at all about that.
Paul, last word to you.
Last word. Researchers, this is based on a piece, as you know, by Pat Hagen. So it's Tel Aviv University looking at 100 students. Selfies are a good thing. We'll take a couple in a minute after this and take it from there. But always happy to see it. So.
All right. Well, thank you for a great review of the business stories. Susan Hayes-Cullerton and indeed Paul O'Dwyer, thank you for joining me this morning.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
The Capital Ideas podcast now features a series hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover what differentiates their investment approach, what learnings have shifted their career trajectories, and how do they find their next great idea? Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by Capital Client Group, Inc.